I'm Cherry Gregg, and this is a Studio 2 Extra. It was 1997, and Tyree Wallace was just 19 years old when police arrested him for the murder of beloved South Philadelphia business owner John Soo Kang. But there was no physical evidence. Witness testimony was beyond sketchy. One person even recanted, and Tyree maintained his innocence. Yet, the DA built a case that ended with a conviction and life sentence against Tyree. Fast forward 26 years, and Tyree is finally a free man. Not because he was exonerated, but because he pleaded guilty to a lesser charge. I sat down with Tyree Wallace and his attorney, Kier Bradford Gray, to talk about his case and future. Tyree, you maintained your innocence for more than 26 years, and you had to swear, raise your hand, and plead guilty in order to get out of prison. What was it like making that decision?
I haven't found a way to articulate that, right? It felt like my soul died a little bit that day. Everyone in that room knew that what they just had me raise my right hand and swear an oath to say was not true. The evidence of my innocence is clear, overwhelming, and it's incontrovertible. Privately, the DA's office and other entities such as that has acknowledged that I didn't commit the crime. They're unwilling to say it on record because of procedure, because of process, because of fear of civil suit against the city, right? That's the wall that we ran into. But the reality is I had spent my entire 20s, 30s, and now more than half of my 40s incarcerated. I had to come home. The reality was either I right fight and probably die in prison, or accept this, there's less of an option, and be home enjoying the new year, sitting here at this interview. So the reality is, I don't know how to articulate how that felt, but it felt like part of my soul died.
So we have to talk about the victim in this case. John Soo Kang, he was murdered in Point Breeze in 1997. He was beloved in the community. And Tyree, he was someone who you respected, someone who you admired, and who had helped your family. How was it being wrongfully convicted of killing someone that you cared about?
It is genuinely unbelievable because there's two pieces in play there. So I was so naive to how our system worked. I genuinely believe that I could not be found guilty for something I didn't do. I want to be clear about that. Not that I wouldn't be found guilty. I didn't think that I could be found guilty because I didn't do it. So you have that component. But then you have the component of being accused of killing someone who you love and who had love for, maybe not you individually, but the community as a whole, and that you were a recipient of how he conducted himself inside of community. It was just a double whammy. I just don't know how to explain it. I was numb. I was afraid. I was 19 years old. I was fighting a system that I just couldn't comprehend how deep what was happening actually was. It wasn't until years later that I realized that these were intentional actions, that this wasn't mistaken identity. This wasn't the officers getting it wrong. This was a blueprint of what they consistently did in the 90s, which Kier is going to be able to talk to much more extensively than I will. But it was a pattern and practice of what these officers were doing in Philadelphia, especially at that time.
And so, Kier, that's the perfect pivot to you, because I've been covering wrongful conviction in Philadelphia for quite some time. What are some of the red flags, specifically in Tyree's case and generally, that you see in these types of cases?
Yeah. So I want to just say this briefly. The district attorney recognized all of the issues in this case, regardless of whether or not he was time barred or whatever. So the stuff that went on behind scenes was a negotiation back and forth to look at all the issues and wrongs in this case. And some of them were very glaring and telling. First and foremost, they had people who had a lot to lose start to formulate narratives that were not credible. They didn't match any of the physical evidence. They didn't match other people's test statements and testimonies that the police had gotten during that time. But at that point, they needed to solve a case. They needed to clear it, and anyone will do. This was the type of culture and environment. Remember, we were in the war on crime during that time. And it was basically, I need to make sure that the community feels safe. And the only way they're going to feel safe is if I say that we got the people who committed homicides. There was no accountability for the way in which they did this. There was no transparency about what they did and how they did it. It's not until late 2017 when Larry gets in, is that we're able to see for the first time the homicide file where they were developing the case, the theories and the narratives that everyone who was interviewed had given. And at that point, you see it glaringly. You say, wait a minute. There were so many red flags that should have told you these statements were not credible, but you didn't care.
And just to be clear, District Attorney Larry Krasner came in. It wasn't until that happened that lawyers working with Tyree were able to see the full file. Is that what you're saying?
Larry did open up the channels. So where if you had an issue that you believed that you needed to look at, that you wanted the DA to look at, and it was legally sound, he would allow you to look at the homicide file to see the investigation process, all of the statements that were taken, all the suspects that were generated. Now, Tyree was not the original suspect in this case. Mm-hmm. There were several other people that were named. There were several other people that had real access and opportunity to do this. And it wasn't until one guy wanted to get from underneath his six armed robberies that he was facing that then started to develop a narrative against Tyree. And the officers took it and ran with it. And even though the statement got different each time, and it sounded not credible at all, they used it, they ran with it, because who's gonna believe Tyree?
And Tyree had an alibi.
Yes.
There were so many different things going on. What is wrong with the system?
So what was wrong with it back then is that we would have never known about all these different statements, because the DA is only obliged to give you what they believe is relevant to the case. And so many of those statements, many of those variations of statements were not even known to the defense at that time. And so this is where the problem lies, where there's a lack of transparency in the system, where you can truly see everything that is done to develop a homicide investigation and what has happened. The defense should get that automatically, because if it's credible, it's credible. If it's not, it's not. And if it's not, we shouldn't go forward with that, because the real killer is still out there, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the lack of transparency in the system, even with a person being accused and his defense counsel, should be paramount to a fair process. Yeah. And that's where we are now. That's what we hope to see moving forward, because we still have issues with that in our system all over, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're getting better in Philadelphia, but you go right outside to Philadelphia to Montgomery County, you're still dealing with those same issues of the past where you're hiding information that you don't think is relevant, even when they're naming other suspects that are viable. And so when there was no mechanism for defense counsel to get a hold of this information, the only thing they would get is what was given to them.
Yeah.
And you've got to work in that parameter of that information. And if Tyree doesn't have real prominent people coming into court saying, this is not the guy, he's got people in his community that you got to leverage their credibility over police officers.
And he's a 19-year-old kid at the time.
Like he just said, he naively thought this system was fair. And I think, unfortunately, he had to really reconcile with that for the last 27 years.
And Tyree, after everything you've been through, the years lost, the injustice, a lot of people would be bitter, but you are not. Why is that?
There is absolute anger there. There's no doubt about it, because this was an intentional act. And the people who are responsible for it will probably never be held to account for doing the things that they've done. The difference is, I don't believe that anger in and of itself is a negative emotion. It's just an emotion. The determining factor of that emotion is what you do with it, right? When we think about some of the greatest things that have happened in our country, happened because people were angry. The women's suffrage movement happened because of people were angry. The civil rights movement was because people were angry with the way they were being treated, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I've decided to make sure that I take that emotion and I funnel it to a positive cause, to a purpose, to the things that I am passionate about. So there is anger there, but it's why I created SRC, Systemic Reformative Change. It's why every day from the time I wake up at 5:00 in the morning to the time I go to sleep at night, I am focused on bringing about systemic reformative change. So I channel that anger into positivity. That way it doesn't become bitterness.
Yeah. And you are founder of SRC, which is a nonprofit. You also are one of the founders of Man Up.
Yes.
Which was actually started while you were incarcerated.
Absolutely.
Tell us about your work, your activism.
Absolutely. So I'll start with Man Up. I had the opportunity to see Philadelphia news, and I saw all of the violence happening inside of Philadelphia streets. So I wanted to know, what can I do to make the situation better? My thought process was to influence as many men going home as humanly humanly possible. So we created a 15-week group therapy session called Man Up. And the first thing we did is we wanted to set the foundation of what a man was. So we developed the Man Up principles of a man. Then we assisted people when they were going home, make sure that they had the resources they needed, make sure that if they wanted the job, they could have a job. Jacqueline Bailey Davis, who is now the former chief of police in Norristown, she was ensuring that anybody who went through the Man Up program could get a college education. We had a whole host of people like G. Lamar Stewart who were helping to make sure that these men had guidance on their way out. And that was my way of having an impact on what was happening in Philadelphia.
And what did that do for you? Sometimes people feel powerless on the inside. Did you feel empowered being able to have influence over so many men who were coming out of the system?
100%. And every time I saw their success as my success. People would come back and they would talk about what the guys were doing, where they were working, how they were having an impact. We would have pictures of the street cleanups that these guys were doing. And it was so empowering to me and to everybody else, and it created a movement. I wound up creating something new for multiple reasons. One, I realized that we were helping individuals. We were helping some families, and we were having a small dent in the problems of the community. But to truly put a dent in the things that I cared about, we had to change systems.
Which is why you have SRC.
Yes, systemic reformative change. We have the ability to engage in political activity. We can endorse candidates, support candidates, raise money. We can do all these different things in a political space, which is where the sausage gets made.
Where you get to have impact
power
on voting and lobby and do all those things. Kier, you mentioned that you want to see some change, specifically around transparency in these cases. What other types of reforms would you like to see to make sure that what happened to Tyree won't happen to someone else?
You know, I love your questions, Sherry. So I've also am a part of starting a nonprofit called Second Justice, and where we provide the legal work for people who are wrongfully convicted, because there's not a lot of people doing this. But in Second Justice, we're not only looking at wrongfully convicted, we are looking at more systemic issues that that impacted this. We want to see better training for defense counsel and more what I would call the types of things that they would need in order to take on homicides. Before, there were no standards. Someone who did tax law could take on a homicide case. Now there are more standards, but there needs to be more defined standards of practice for people to take on these really serious cases where people are facing life in prison. So we'd like to see that. We'd like to also understand the types of practices that the police departments are able to use and not, so that we can advance better techniques as it relates to interviewing witnesses, as it relates to questioning witnesses, and the type of transparency that one needs to have. When I talked about the transparency, you ever heard that word due process? Well, due process means fair. Is it a fair process? And we want to make sure that our system is credible, no matter what the outcomes are, that we can feel comfortable that it's making the right decisions to advance public safety.
I love that. And what's the next step in Tyree's case? Will there be an effort to actually seek exoneration and clear his name?
Oh, absolutely. So we're not stopping seeking justice for Tyree, because we know the case and we know what happened. And I want to say this. Before we went to Tyree having to plead guilty, the DA did offer us the opportunity to have Tyree plead no contest. But because right now there are lawsuits making the system of city atone for the lack of accountability on these officers, that offer was taken off the table. And they said, well, now you have to plead guilty. And so what I think we need to do is we need to continue to push for the justice that we need to. There are people, many people that know that Tyree was not involved, and we're really trying to work with them to be brave enough to come in front of the court or in front of any jurist and speak their truth. There are some people that were willing to do that with the DA behind scenes, but afraid to get on the stand and say that.
And that's what's necessary. You need somebody, one of these witnesses who recanted, to come out
on the record
and clear Tyree's name.
That's right.
Last question to you, Tyree.
Yes.
What do you hope people take from your story?
That resilience lies within all of us, right? We all can overcome whatever the challenges may be. If you consistently work to be the best version of yourself and surround yourself with good people who are aligned with your mission, I think that everything is possible. The second part to that is we have to make sure that we are holding this system accountable for the things that they are doing.
That was Tyree Wallace and his attorney, Keir Bradford Gray. Tyree has maintained his innocence in the murder of John Sue Kang for nearly 27 years. If you like what you heard, please be sure to subscribe to the Studio 2 podcast and rate and review this episode. Then listen to the show to hear me and my co-host, Avi Wolfman-Arendt, live Tuesday through Thursday on WHYY 90.9 FM and streaming on YouTube. Our producers are Debbie Builder, Paige Burry Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks engineered this extra. Kevin McCrory is our executive producer. I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for listening.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.